Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What the fuck is up, Metalhead? This is Cody Perez of American Overdose, and I'm letting you know right now, Milwaukee Metal Fest is happening in 2024, and they've added American Overdose to play this motherfucker. So make sure and go get your tickets at therave.com. You can visit MilwaukeeMetalFest.com for more details. You'll be playing on Sunday alongside bands like Avatar, Lacuna Coil, In Flames, Slaughter to Prevail! So get your fucking tickets, or we will come and find your ass!
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the show. We did it. We made it to episode 700. And what a guest do we have today? This was such a monumental chat for me to have with one of my idols, Steve Vai, the one and only, the riff beast, the wizard of guitar. I mean, the guy, so many people have picked up a guitar because of this guy. He's an amazing individual, an incredible player, an all around excellent human being. And I'm so happy to have had this chat with him. And thank you to everyone who's gearing up for Milwaukee Metal Fest. We are going to beat last year's attendance. We're going to beat our goal, and we're so close. So go get your tickets now at therave.com/metalfest, or just go check out metalfest.com. We're going to have more bands, more vendors, a ton of great meet and greets, and so much more. I mean, wait till you see all the merch we're going to have, all the exclusive designs, all the collaborations. It's really going to be a monumental year for us for Milwaukee Metal Fest. And if we get to this ticket threshold, we will lock in 2025. So please go get your tickets if you haven't yet. And check us out. Hatebreed is playing May 18th, Saturday, May 18th, with Municipal Waste, Testament, Mr. Bungle, Possessed, Deicide, and many others. Therave.com/MetalFest is the link to go to. And while you're at Metal Fest, check out Century Media. They have a stage. They have a ton of great bands on the roster and on the show. After the podcast today, go to centurymedia.store. You'll see releases from Upon Stone, Lacuna Coil, Bewitcher, who's playing on the Friday. So many more. Skeletal Remains, they're playing on Sunday. Century Media is just absolutely killing it right now. Not only do they have their own stage at Milwaukee Metal Fest, but they have a ton of great merch and records and vinyl over at centurymedia.store. So we appreciate them sponsoring today's show and sponsoring Milwaukee Metal Fest. Also, thank you so much to IndieMerchStore.com. They are presenting the main stage at Milwaukee Metal Fest. And right now you can go to IndieMerchStore.com and save 10% when you use the code JOSTA10 at checkout. You'll see the pre-orders for Vomit the Soul. You'll see all the new merch they got up from so many great bands. They got that Carnifex capsule that they just put up. Carnifex is out now with Cattle Decapitation, and they are on the Chaos and Carnage tour. We appreciate IndieMerchStore.com supporting the JOSTA show and the Milwaukee Metal Fest. You can check it all out at IndieMerchStore.com. Use the promo code JOSTA10. Link will be in the show notes. And those of you who had heard a bunch of these bands that are on the fest on the monthly music show on the Patreon, you let us know who you are most excited to see, and we appreciate that. You can email us as well. If you're not on the Patreon, it's JOSTASHOW@gmail.com. If you have any suggestions for the 2025 lineup, or if you want to just talk about the last few episodes, we got a lot of good feedback from everybody, from Kyle from Vitriol, Danny Diablo. We also had, obviously, Tim Lambesis and Ken Zuzzi. People are still checking out those episodes, so I appreciate all the positive feedback and everybody sounding off about those episodes. It's good to be back, and today's episode 700 with Steve Vai is brought to you by Dunable Guitars, another presenter of the Milwaukee Metal Fest. After the podcast today, head on over to dunableguitars.com. You will see all the killer axes that they have for sale, and you can get yours now and save. The link will be in the show notes, and the coupon code will be in the show notes, because I don't have it right here in front. Oh yeah, I do. The coupon code is MMF24, and you can save 10% off. Say you want to get the Asteroid, or you want to get the Narwhal, whichever of the Dunable DE series guitars that you want to get, you can save 10% off, which is a huge savings for a quality instrument when you use the code MMF24 at dunableguitars.com, and the link will be in the show notes. Again, if you want to go above and beyond and support the Patreon, it's patreon.com/Josta. And of course, for Milwaukee Metal Fest meet and greets or Hatebreed meet and greets for the fall tour with Hatebreed, Carcass, Harmsway, and Crypta, you can go to martyrstore.net and use the code JJ10. That's MARTYRSTORE.net. Use the code JJTEN for 10% off all the merch, meet and greets, and much, much more at martyrstore.net. We got the one and only Steve Vai. Enjoy the show.
My friend, the lead singer of Hatebreed, the infamous and notorious Jamie Josta, is in the building. That's what's up.
Jamie Josta from the metal band Hatebreed. That guy's famous.
Coffee, death metal, and push-ups.
That's Jamie Josta. Remember Jamie Josta? You know him. He's a podcaster, but he's also a metal man.
I would say delete that.
That shit is hard.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 700. My guest is Steve Vai. He's going to be joining us in just a second. And I'm so excited, honored, thrilled, humbled. I mean, I can't believe we made it to episode 700. Did I say 600? Mike, what did I say?
You said 700 the first time.
Okay, good. Shout out to everybody who's joining us from Patreon. We got Paul Fossa Fairley. We got Jay Libertson. Liberston. How do I pronounce it, Jay? Shout out to Jay. Jeffrey Kuhn, what's up? Jeff says he just heard Vi on Alex Skolnick's podcast last month with Satriani and Eric Johnson. Well, I got to go listen to that. Robert Bouchard says, what the fuck is up, Denny's? I mean, that's funny you mentioned that, Rob, because I think we've all enjoyed Denny's, you know, late at night, but have we ever been to a show or plan on playing a show there? I doubt it. Wouldn't it be great if Steve Vai was like, just was like, yeah, we don't want to repeat that, but we'll do Waffle House. Like, what the fuck? What's up? There he is.
All right.
How's it going, man? Thanks so much for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure.
This is a big moment for us. It's episode 700.
700. Wow, you guys have been busy.
Yes, we have. We've been very busy. And I met you once. I was hosting an award show, red carpet at an award show. And we chatted briefly about your nephew. I believe his name is Roger.
Yeah.
Who was a fan of my band, Hatebreed.
Yes. That's my nephew, Roger Vai. He's a big metalhead, total metal fan. He always reaches out to me for tickets.
Shout out to Roger. Do you call him Rog?
Roger. He's a great kid. Real rock fan.
Yeah, that was so cool. And then I think I saw you again at like VH1 Metal Show or somewhere. But anyways, it's good to finally get you on the podcast. You've been like the white whale, so to speak, as far as booking a guest, and couldn't have asked for a better one for
thank you, as opposed to the white snake.
Yes, I recently had a challenge on the podcast. If someone could name one white snake song that isn't about love. Do you got one for me, Steve?
You have to distinguish the difference between sex and love, I guess.
Yes, good point. But someone did mention a song that was not about either, and I was like, oh shit, and I went and listened to it. Now I'm forgetting the title, but
I'll have to go back through the catalog and check it out.
At that same award show, I think it was Loudwire Award, shout out to Loudwire. Mm-hmm. I did talk to David Coverdale for just a second, and it was such a strange interaction. And we took a picture and he said, use that as your album cover. Make that your album. And I was like, but he was serious. Like, either he was fucking with me or he really was dead serious. And I don't think I played it right, but is he like
that? I'm sure he was taking the piss.
Okay.
David, I just saw him recently. He came to a show I did with G3. And you know, that was such a nice surprise. And he's looking great. He's still very David. You know, he's still working in the studio and doing his thing.
Now, when you have guests like that, are you tempted to say, come out and join us for a song.
Yeah, sure. And I did reach out. I did ask them, but you know, a lot of times, I know for me too, you know, a lot of times when you go see a show, you just want to sit and watch the show. Because once you know you're going up on the stage, it's different. You know, it's a little different feel. And then I know for me as a guitar player, I got to think, okay, what gear and what song and, you know, this kind of thing. Most of the time it's very easy and nice and I love doing it. But David was just recovering from a sort of like a chest thing. So he was, he wasn't in any desire to get up there.
Yeah, I don't blame him. At this point, I'm only 46, but I think like I need a teleprompter or something. I'm at the point where there's so many songs and some of them run together. And when I'm put on the spot, like we do a big jam before the festival that I do, and I use cheat sheets. But how do you keep the brain? How do you keep the brain fog away and remember all your parts? And do you make your set list sort of friendlier to the ones that just roll off like second nature?
Well, I don't really have any bad habits that can, you know, get in the way and create brain fog, you know, so that's helpful. I love my music. That's helpful. And the thing because I ask myself the same question sometime. It's funny. The other night I was watching, for some reason, I walked in the living room and they were watching one of the shows that was recorded on the G3 tour. Oh, no. It was the Inviolate tour. And I rarely watch myself performing. And a part of me was like, how do you remember all those notes? You know, but it's kind of easy because everything's melodic. You know, I don't necessarily, first of all, you go through that phase where you have to learn the music and you just have to get it down. You got to do the repetition and you get it to where your fingers don't really need your mind so much to think about where to go for those parts that are part of the song. And they're melodic. So I hear the melodies. And the melodies shape the fingers. So the melodies don't go away in my head. When it comes time to solo, you know, the whole object there is to not think about anything, you know, just to be open.
And then your hands just guided to the appropriate frets that you recorded the solo.
There's kind of like a feed. It's almost like a lapse in time where your mind is open. So you're observing, you know, as opposed to thinking, I can do this scale. I can do this, you know, this, because this, I know this will work. I don't usually think so much of that. That works in the background, you know, the music theory part of it. But when you're really open, there's this sort of time shift where you're hearing this. I know this sounds very abstract, but I'm trying.
No, it's fascinating.
Yeah. You're hearing what you want to do. It's not like a hearing. It's an impulse. It's just like this creative impulse that if you get out of the way of thinking, the impulse comes and then you will it. You're willing. And you're willing it through your fingers. And as it's going through your fingers, you're just like a fraction of a moment, basically, ahead with listening. So it creates this free-flowing, in-the-moment kind of thing. And when I'm attached to that, when I'm connected that way, that's the bomb. That's the unbelievably rewarding. That's when all your best stuff comes. That's when all your unique creative impulses come and your actual personality, your authentic personality can start flowing through. But I also very easily recognize when I lose it. You know, this is a life practice. It's a mental focus. You're taking your willpower to the gym and working it out, you know, because it's so easy to be bamboozled by thoughts that come in.
You're so right.
Yeah, you know, it's a shift. It's a shift from inner listening to mental meandering. And that little mental meandering voice kicks in, and usually it's very, there's fear in it, you know, the little voice. It's like, well, what are these people thinking of me? How am I going to get to, what am I going to do here? Why does this sound so bad in the, you know, whatever. There's like this little mental commentary that can derail you. And you have to recognize when it's happening and take your attention away from it and go back. It's a constant kind of pulling. It's like a meditation, you know, because you got to pull your attention out of the stupid shit that's going on in your head and bring it back to recognize, look, intensely observing, not thinking about, but observing what you're doing. It's like a razor edge.
Yeah, I mean, you're bringing back these memories of when I got on stage with Slayer in Munich in 2004. Luckily, it was pre-YouTube, pre-camera phone, but that was the moment that fucked me, where I sang Rain and Blood over Angel of Death. Okay. And Kerry King comes over and kicks me really hard, and Tom is laughing. And from that moment on, the shadow of doubt in my mind. Well, yeah. And also I was drinking at the time. So like you said, you got to love it. Of course, I love Slayer and I love it, but I was drinking at the time. I haven't touched booze since, thank God. So that was a good result of that. But now, like when we do our jam, that little guy that burrowed in my head way back then that fucked that up is now thinking, oh man, they're going to, if I flub one word, one line, it's going to be on YouTube. And I know that pressure is always there for guitar players like yourself, but when I watch your live videos, and these are like pre all this fancy editing and tricks and stuff, when you are all firing on just all cylinders, it is magical. And so I wonder, does that play into it too? Like if you're playing with these incredible players and you guys are all in that flow state night after night, it's got to be extremely rewarding.
Well, you know that feeling. You know, I mean, you can be in an intense metal band or a jazz band, and you can catch that flow. And that's all, it's all about isolating your attention. You know, so this episode that you had where you sang the wrong lyrics and it planted a thought.
That's not uncommon. Like a little guy, like a little demon.
It's not uncommon, you know, that's how it happens. And what it means is you got some work to do, you know, and the work is to recognize that little demon is full of shit. It's a lie, you know, and it doesn't have any power over you in reality unless you give it that your power. And giving it your power is merely means giving it your attention. And fear does that. Fear is insidious. And I can tell you this, they're not even your thoughts.
It feels like that sometimes.
I have them too. I have them.
It feels like a cloud, like invading the
It's in the collective. And if you have fear, you have access to that thought. And it burrows a little hole. So the practice is take your power back, you know? It's bullshit. Because you know what? If you're going to screw up a lyric, you're going to screw it up. So what? You know what I mean?
On to the next one.
So on to the next thing. See ya.
And you know what? Some of those songs from the pre-party that we did before my festival, I did like, I was off by one word or here and there, but I was able to let it go because I went to give Rob Dukes from Exodus the mic and I said, I'm drawing a blank. Sing Rain and Blood. It got me. And he goes, I don't know it. I'm drawing a blank. So then I had to do it. And some of the videos went up and I didn't read the comments and it wasn't that bad. But yeah, it's like, it's always worse the outcome is always worse in your mind. And then when you get past it, but yeah. I feel like it, and maybe it's because I just need to exercise more. I need to rehearse more. I need to not be dealing with the guest list or not be dealing with the record label, or all this other, you know, surrounding stuff. But
no, you can do all that powerfully, effectively. If you've got the brain muscles for that and the interest, you could navigate all those things like a boss and get on that stage and maybe mess up a lyric, maybe not, you know? But you got to create the space for it. Meaning, when you're doing your business, the band business, the guest list, look, we all got to deal with that, you know? we all got to deal with those things. You give it your attention, just like you're giving your improvisation your attention, or you're being in the moment of being on the stage. When you're on that stage and you're not worried, you're not thinking about messing up lyrics, and you're in that energy with the band, and you know, the whole collective power of everything is connected, you know, in an interesting way, you can apply the same kind of thing to all of the other things you're doing.
Today's episode is brought to you by Capsulate. If you've ever had that awful day after drinking feeling when you're dragging ass, Capsulate has got you covered. This is a product, comes in a little packet. You can take it before and during drinking. It's one of the most potent products on the market. It's doctor formulated, supports your liver, gets all those toxic byproducts of alcohol out of your symptoms, out of your system, so that you don't have any of those dragon ass symptoms. When you're trying to go to a show like, say, Milwaukee Metal Fest and hang out with me, I don't want you, you know, head down on the table missing all your favorite bands because you're dehydrated because you came and raged at the pre-party. I got you covered. Capsulate in a portable packet where you can take anywhere. Of course, we'll have a bunch of these four packs. If you're looking at the, if you're watching on YouTube and you're looking at the screen, you can see it comes, a weekend saver comes with free pre-dosed packs, or you can get a box of 14 pre-dosed packs for before you start hitting the sauce. Okay, Buster? That's Capsulate, CAPSULYTE.com. Use the promo code GAS for 30% off and get yourself a four pack of that pregame so we can have you operating at full force. All right. We'll see you at Milwaukee Metal Fest. And if you see me in the crowd, I'll have a couple Capsulate packages to hand out to you as well if you're not feeling 100%. Big thanks to Capsulate. That's CAPSULYTE.com. Promo code GAS for 30% off. Now back to the show. Hey, everybody. It's Jamie here letting you know today's episode is brought to you by CenturyMedia.store. I am so psyched to see all the Century Media bands at Milwaukee Metal Fest. Can't thank them enough for sponsoring today's episode and presenting the rave stage lineup at the Milwaukee Metal Fest 2024. You're going to see bands like Upon Stone, Skeletal Remains, Bewitcher, Night Demon, Lacuna Coil, and many others. Century Media is celebrating 35 years of bringing you all your favorites in extreme music, from legends like Queensryche to metal standard setters like Napalm Death, At the Gates, Suicide Silence, Mayhem, and many others. You can get a bunch of these releases over at CenturyMedia.store. And again, make sure you check out all your favorite Century Media bands at Milwaukee Metal Fest 2024. When you go to the rave stage, Upon Stone, Skeletal Remains, Bewitcher, Night Demon, I'll be over there. Who knows? Maybe I'll even come out of Mosh Pit Retirement for Skeletal on Sunday, May 19th. All right, everybody. Big thanks to CenturyMedia.store. No coupon code needed. Now back to the show. How did you arrive at this? Was there a point where you became more like organized in your home life or your digital life? Like, do you do declutters? Do you do meditation? Do you like, what's your exercise routine like? Are you drinking lion's mane tea and all this? Like, what is the secret sauce?
Well, for me, my daily routine is pretty conventional. You know, I wake up, have a cup of coffee, I meditate. I work out, very simple. kind of stuff. And then I go through some emails and then I just start working. But when I was younger, I had, at the age of 20, I went through a very difficult mental period. It was a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety, and it became debilitating. And there wasn't really anything that I could see that was bringing it on. So this usually forces you, your own mental suffering will force you into surrendering, so to speak. So what that means is I got to a point where I just did, I realized I don't know anything, you know, but I just want more above all else. Because when you're really suffering, you can get to a point where you make a firm decision that you want more peace. And you just want more peace. And it may sound kind of weird, you know, for some people, like airy fairy and kind of, you know, hey, when you're in hell, which is mental angst, that's actually what hell is, mental angst, you can be brought to a point where you're ready for some peace. And that's just was an internal desire. And from there, because I believe I authentically decided that that's what I wanted. You have to be authentic, meaning you got to really mean it. And not just mental lip service. You have to feel what it would feel like to already have it. You know, you have to feel, what would that mean to be at peace, you know? So the moment you can start to go there, your external world changes. I don't know if this is the kind of thing you guys talk about on this show.
Yeah, all the time.
You know, okay, good.
No, the process that you just discussed was, see, I've done it for other things. I need to do it for peace. Like I did it for Ozfest. I just acted like I was already on Ozfest. I acted like I met Sharon and I met Ozzy. And I just believed that it had already happened. And
well, that's the secret of manifesting anything. You have to feel as though you already have it. And then it starts to take a hold. And then from there, for me, that led me to certain studies. You know, I started out with New Age, and then I went through all these different kinds of spiritual studies. But to answer your question, there came a point in my life, probably about 15, 20 years ago, where I discovered teachings that allowed me to recognize what I was doing in my own head. See, that the study of most things that you study require focusing on the outside world, like science. You know, you put the microscope on the outside world and you dig down deep into things. Spiritual study is you take the microscope and you turn it around and you start recognizing the quality of the thoughts that you're thinking in your head, because the thoughts create your reality. There's no debating that.
For sure.
The way it is, you know, what you think creates your reality of the world you see, because you're looking through your belief system. So your belief system is based on stories in your head. Most of the time, they're very painful. They're reflected on the past, and they resent, regret what happened to me, what I should have done, what they should have done, what they did. And that's regret and resentment. And that we use that to create an identity for ourselves, when in reality, they're just thoughts in the head that are just wrong. And then there's the future. You know, if you ever want to understand what fear is, it can only happen when you're projecting your attention into the future.
You were
afraid of screwing up lyrics in the future. So that's The spiritual path turns around your attention, allows you to recognize that you're doing that. It's totally. Not actually in the outside world. You're doing it. So when you take your power back, you take control of the way that you choose to think about things.
I'm so happy you said that because I got over the fear of flying like probably 18 years ago. I read Krishnamurti, the book on fear.
Oh, yeah. Krishnamurti.
And it was like,
yeah.
And I need to go back and I need to read that and apply it to other things. But I think I've thrived in chaos for so long that sometimes you don't want to let go of the chaos because you think it equates to financial success or popularity or whatever. And for me, like a huge turning point in my life, I have always given you credit when Passion and Warfare came out, like that changed the game, like for not only for independent artists, but just for people doing something different. And I remember taking meetings, like when we were trying to get my first band signed. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Relativity, or I went to the distributor of Relativity, and I was like 14 at the time. And they were like, what is this kid doing in here? Get out of here. Mm-hmm. And
14, right on, brother.
I did a show at the Space at Chase with my old band in New York City, and Gigi Allen had played there the night before, and I just wanted to be Rollins, so I had bare feet, and they were like, are you crazy? Put on you're gonna get hepatitis, put your fucking shoes on. Gigi played here last night. It was wild. But I would listen to that song Sisters, and that was like the first time that I could feel music take my anxiety away or the fear of the future. And that was so huge for me. And then when I learned about what you had gone through, making that record, getting signed, getting the record out, going basically against all the odds because of they only had certain examples of solo guitar player albums prior to you that you kind of had to be held to that flame. So you knew at that point then to just always just keep it moving, like, okay, we'll get a singer for the next one. We'll change the label for the next one. Or did you have it mapped out and more organized, not like chaotic where it's all right, we're doing this now.
Well, I always felt that in any field that you're in, you have to prioritize your actions. You know, you got to prioritize. So if you're a musician, there's a lot of moving parts in your career. You're making a record, who you're going to make it with, who's going to produce it, who's going to release it, how you're going to promote it, where you're going to find all these things, where's the money come from, where's the time come from, all these things, right? Who's going to do the art? How am I going to do this? So every artist is, most are confronted with these things, and all these things are important. You know, they're very important, but they're actually of relative importance. You know, they're important, but they're of relative importance because you have to have first what's of vital importance, the number one thing of greatest importance. And that is how you feel about the music you're playing. The music that you're creating, is it you? Are you comfortable in your skin with it? Are you feel like you're expressing your true creative impulses without any excuses? You know what I mean? So I had gone through this whole period with Dave Roth and Alcatraz and Whitesnake. And I loved it. I had a great time. You know, I mean, that was like rock and roll stuff, you know? And, but always, always in the back of my mind was this brand of music. It was just, it had a thumbprint on it, just like anybody that has a desire to create music, you know? So it got to the point where push came to shove, you know? I was in these rock bands and I was digging it, but I knew that the music, I say the music was limited. It wasn't limited in that it was great rock music, but it was limited to me in regard to where I wanted to go musically. So that impulse to just stop everything and make Passion and Warfare, it was very easy. It wasn't something I had to struggle with because I knew I was going to do it. It's just like, I'm doing that and that's that, because I knew that the job of a composer, songwriter, guitar player, at least my job, it's not everybody's job. My job was to manifest the music that touched me, you know, that was saying, I want to come out. And some people, that's not the case. They're not composers. Maybe they're players, and they can go from one style to another, and they love it, you know, but because it's the playing. But when you have a compositional mind, that has to come out. And if you compromise it, you're going to suffer. You're going to suffer internally, even if you have huge success at something that is not quite what you want, you know, like with the Dave Roth and Whitesnake, huge success. I loved it. It was great on all fronts, except it didn't scratch that itch of the music that I wanted to create. So it wasn't like I had to make a choice. I knew I have to do this. So, and I thought it was the end of my career, really, because there was nothing like it. You know, Passion and Warfare is not a conventional instrumental guitar record. But when the creative impulse is so strong, that doesn't matter. So I made that record, and I had what was of vital importance. I had the music that made me comfortable in my skin, the music that I felt I did a good job in respecting. From, you know, I respected the creative voice in my head. And that's the greatest honor you can do for the world, because when you're doing something that you love, there's a quality that flows into it. And then that quality is received by those who resonate with it. So when you say you heard Sisters, that's because Sisters had to come out. It was a very authentic, when I started writing and playing Sisters, it was as if it was a perfect download for me. You know, like the universe said, okay, this is for you. And I loved it. You have no, every note of that piece of music, I'm in every note of it, you know, and I didn't care what anybody might have thought, because I can't control that, but I can control this, and I'm giving it. And some people will pick up on that. And it sounds like you might have. But when you have...
That whole record is such a game changer. And I thank the whole team and everybody who believed in it enough to take that risk to do it. And I can imagine that you probably took it other places and they didn't know what to do with it or didn't understand it. So just the fact that Relativity, so, I mean, there had to have been somebody there that...
Yeah, it was Cliff Coltrary.
Oh, Cliff.
I was signed to... Yeah,
I met
was
with
signed,
him once.
Yeah. Cliff was a real record guy. I was signed to Capitol when I was as I was making Passion and Warfare. And when I finished it and handed it in, they hadn't paid me yet. And the executive branch had changed. And I remember they actually said to me, and I could virtually walk to Capitol Records from my studio at the time. They said, we don't know what this record is at all. They had just had a lot of success with Eric Johnson with Avia Musicom. And they actually said to me, this is not Eric Johnson. And we don't know what to do with it. We don't know how to market it. So they actually told me, we're not going to market it. We're just going to put it out and we're cutting your advance in half. So, you know, that was fine. I said, fine, you know, I'm out of here. Good. Now I'm gone.
And you were able to get out of the deal.
Yeah. They breached it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I didn't feel desperate. I wasn't, you know, I didn't, I just followed my instincts, and my instincts said, no, this record will get buried. It's probably not gonna, I didn't have any great expectations for it because it was so different, but I knew it needed some marketing, and I wasn't going to be a chump, you know, and they signed the deal, and, you know, so they want to break the deal. I'm gone, you know? So I did bring it around to a couple of other labels, and they were just scratching their head. Well, I don't know what to do with this. And then I brought it to Cliff. And at that time, Cliff was, they were just starting Relativity Records as an offshoot from their distribution company, which was called Important Records. And he heard it and he said, okay, this is it, you know, and he released it, and it was gold in 1 week.
Insane.
And that was a shocker.
The end cap. And this was such a great time where you could walk in and just see the records and the posters and the cutouts. Yeah. And the artists.
Yeah, they did such a great job marketing it. You see that? I mean, you go into a record store and there was a, you know, 6 foot cutout of me, you know, they did such a good job. And that was, I was lucky because I just decided when Capitol wanted to pull the plug on it or just change the deal. I'm so lucky that I went to Relativity.
So
what I was saying was, see, I had the goods and all that other stuff that's of relative importance, the label, the, you know, promo marketing, you know, all of this, it happens in and of itself at the right time. If you have the clarity to recognize the cooperative components when they arise. Because what we try to do is figure all those out ahead of time, and you can't.
Yeah, no, and it was you that said, I love this. I wrote this down as soon as you said this. It was, if I really like it and it touches me, that's enough. And yeah. I'm like, that's so perfectly said because, and my old manager, Steve Richards, rest in peace. He said to me, if it's real, the world will feel it. And it was in regards to Corey Taylor doing this solo song for the Spider-Man soundtrack. Yeah. I was so deep in Hatebreed, Slipknot, Slayer world that it was like, whoa, he's doing this beautiful acoustic thing. And it's not called Slipknot. It's going to be on this major, you know, motion picture soundtrack. But when I heard it, it was so authentic and real. I was like, yeah, it's a hit. A hit is a hit. But having that team or having someone who's going to fight for you is always key. You know, having that team, but you're right. If you know, and you got the track or you got the album, all that other stuff will fall in place.
The funny thing that a lot of people don't really understand is you don't have to fight for anything. You know, when you fight for something, you create more of what you're fighting, you know? So like, and I've caught myself doing this, you know, but it's like, for instance, when Capitol said, no, we're not going to do that, or, you know, we're going to change this deal, I could have fought, you know, I could have fought them. No, you have a deal. I'm suing you. You better give me that money and you better do the marketing and you know? So that's hell, you know? And the alternative is I recognize the situation. I immediately, there was a high quality no. A high quality no has no fighting in it. It's like,
wow,
nope. That's it.
Yep.
And that's freedom. Because otherwise I'm feeling like I'm being held captive by somebody else. Fuck that.
Yeah.
That's a thought. That's a fear. And when you have the product that you love, you don't have to fight for anything. The right audience will come to you. That hit that you wrote or that your friend was marketing, the whole world is not going to like it. The ones that that resonate with it will like it. There's people that don't like the Beatles. You know what I mean? So this whole notion of hit and whatever, you if you have the goods, meaning if you feel like you are in that music, and this could be, you mentioned all the metal bands, especially metal, because metal generates energy like no other music, right? And when you're connected to that intense energy of metal, it's not it's not an angry force. It's connected, and the energy just flows. You know what it's like when the whole band is connected. That metal energy will move mountains. You know?
Sure.
You have to have the goods. You got to have the music that allows that that enables you to feel that way, that you can connect to. If you're playing music that's not entirely you because you think that this is the hit that I need, you, even if you get the hit, you're going to be a miserable son of a bitch.
Right. How many artists have we, right? How many artists have we seen that they get that one hit and then the people only go and they want to hear that one hit and they're like, why?
Yeah, because I hate that song because it's not me, but here I am having to play it and people are making t-shirts, you know?
Yeah, no, that's...
Buyer beware.
So from...
There's nothing wrong with having a hit, you know?
I always say one'll you can coast, you can live. I mean, we got the casino right by here and I go through there when the bands are playing at the Wolf Den and I'm like, oh, there's that song, and I go see who it is and I'm like, that's a great life. To do that circuit and to have those big songs, and I know some of them get tired of playing it, but it's still it must be such an honor just to even have, you know, one of those like classic songs that gets you a booking at every casino in the States, you know, every
well, it can be
chili cook off. Some people think they're above the chili cook off. Hey, I happen to see some kick ass players at the chili cook-off. between Passion and Warfare and Sex and Religion, I always wondered, what were the other tapes that you got? Like, what were the other vocalists that were suggested to you? Were there runner-ups besides Devin? And do you remember any of them?
Yeah. I got really hot on a couple of people. John Corabi.
Wow.
Yeah, he was almost, he was somebody that I was really looking at. I had recorded him. He had a band called Angora, and I recorded them in my studio, produced a couple of songs for them, and he was great. I really liked him. There were some others because the label was sending me tapes, Cliff. But once I heard Devin, it was like, what is that? Oh my God, you know, and he was a kid, he was a teenager, you know, and so, you know, what I did do right before, right in between, there was two projects I did in between, well, no, I'm sorry, the project I did after Passion and Warfare was a record that I released last year called Vi Gash.
Oh, right.
Yeah. That was, I started to put my radar out for Sex and Religion. I was looking for band members, and I was commissioned to deliver this record. And I was a real motorcycle enthusiast. You know, I had like 7 Harleys, and I loved riding. And my friend Johnny Sombrato, we call him Gash because he had this burn accident when he was younger and 60% of his body was covered in burn scars. He came, you know, he lived in New York and he came out and we were best buddies and we drove our bikes. We did all these great trips and I wanted some music to listen to while I was riding the bike that sounded like the way I felt when I was riding the Harley, you know, because it's a great, I mean, if you talk to a motorcycle enthusiast, they'll wax on forever about the freedom, the, you know, just the openness, being with your friends and the empowerment. And I wanted the music to sound like that. So there was another another situation where I just felt compelled. There was a little voice, whatever, that just said, go in the studio right now and record a straight ahead, simple rock record that's uplifting, engaging, and good melodies, no exotic long guitar solos, you know, just straight ahead rock and roll. The kind of rock that I was a teenager in the 70s. And then with guys like Dave Roth and Whitesnake and those kinds of bands, something really stripped down. And boy, did it was so much fun. The record came out like in a week and a half or something. And then I needed to put vocals on it and I didn't have anybody to sing it. I tried singing it. It was an abysmal disaster because I don't sing rock and roll. You know, I don't have that kind of voice.
Can we hear that? Can we hear those demos? we ever put those out?
You will never hear them.
Hey, everybody. Jamie letting you know today's episode is brought to you by IndieMerchStore.com, the one and only IndieMerchStore.com, our longest podcast sponsor and the presenter of the main stage at the Milwaukee Metal Fest 2024. After the podcast today, head on over to IndieMerchStore.com. You'll see Carnifex is celebrating their 10th anniversary of the Die Without Hope album with a sick new merch drop. Pick up some classic and new tees, plus they have hoodies, long sleeves, and more from the band, plus a ton of great pre-orders. I saw they just put up the Vomit the Soul pre-orders and a bunch of restocks. Head on over to IndieMerchStore.com. Use the promo code JASTA10 for 10% off. Big thanks to IndieMerchStore.com. While I have you, big thanks to today's sponsor, Dunable Guitars, the one and only Dunable Guitars, who are bringing you quality gear at a great price. And right now you can get it at an even better price. If you want your favorite new acts, check out the riff sticks over at dunableguitars.com. That's D-U-N-A-B-L-E guitars.com. They are presenting the Dunable DE series. Right now you can see the Asteroid, the Narwhal, and many other models. Josta Show listeners get 10% off with the code MMF24. And make sure you check out all your favorite bands on the Dunable martyrstore.net stage at Milwaukee Metal Fest. Big thanks to Dunable Guitars. Now back to the show.
But Gash was he wasn't a singer. He didn't do it professionally. But he loved to sing, you know, and I could hear something in his voice, and I threw him in the studio and he started singing and I almost died. I couldn't believe his voice. It was so authentically rock and roll. And that guy was one of the most unique people. He was a hardcore, like, Italian biker from New York, you know, totally out of his mind, unpredictable, funny, unbelievably lovable and charming and crazy. He had the rock star DNA like few people I've met, and he could sing. So that record, we only recorded about 8 songs, and then I had to get back and finish the Sex and Religion thing. And I was planning on going back and fleshing out that Gash record with a few more songs and whatnot. But John was unfortunately killed in a motorcycle accident back then. And I was just so disheartened. I put the whole project on the shelf and just turned my back on it for 31 years.
Wow.
But I would listen to it through the years. And I really liked that, you know, there was something about captured that energy that I was wanted to capture. So
you stayed in touch with his family and yeah. You worked out with the estate to yeah. release it finally. That's amazing.
Yeah. Wow. Worked out great. And it was funny because when it came out, I thought maybe a few of my fans would like it, you know, but it sold pretty well. I was surprised. It got on the radio but I can't, you know, I couldn't back it up or promote it with a tour or anything like that. So, but it's a great record.
Is there any vocalists that you know of today that are similar in style, like that you could compare him to?
No.
Wow. I can't wait to check it out.
Yeah, so, he sounds great, man.
So with Devin, when, you know, you decided on him, was there any, besides John Corabi, was there anybody else that, that you had your eye on?
It was right before Pearl Jam. broke. So I was watching Eddie Vedder.
Okay.
They hadn't broke, and I didn't know how stable the band was, but I liked his voice. I never reached out or anything like that. I really liked Perry Farrell. I was very artistic and bold. But no, other than that, there was tapes that came, but I would just go, no, you know.
Right on. Well, that record too. I mean, now going back and watching some of those videos, like Denmark in 93, there's a great one I suggest people go check out on YouTube. And Devin's like one of our favorite guests. Like whenever we have him on, he's incredible.
Devin's the best.
We did Ozfest together, and he was right about to have his first kid. And I was a young dad, and he's freaking out. And I was freaking out because I just wanted to talk to him about you. And I'm like, and then I'm watching him play, and I'm like, wow, I never knew how talented he was up until that point. I mean, I knew, but I didn't know the production and the multi-instrumentation and all this stuff. And then it kind of clicked, and I was like, wait, are you an alien? Is Steve Vai an alien? He's like, we want you guys to think that we're aliens, but we're just like regular people. Just maybe I'm a little weirder than him, but and we hit it off on that tour, and he would come on the bus and hang and stuff. But I could tell that the metal was too close to the dark river, and knowing that I'm always pulled to the dark river, we were one in the same. And like, okay, yeah, let's get through this tour, get home to our families, do what we got to do. But how do you, what would you suggest to those people who are so talented, who are going to hear this or are inspired by you, to what is the best way to stay away from the dark river? Is it through the meditation? Is it through confronting, you know, that fear?
Well,
or is it just repetition?
The only way to stay away, give me a little more info on what the dark river is. I believe just I understand.
Just the drugs and the women and the bad food and the porn and the, I mean, it's just, especially as you get more successful, it's.
Well, you can't try, because trying means it's on your mind. It doesn't require discipline. The only way to avoid all of that stuff is when it's just not a desire at all, when you actually prefer to not have it. So sometimes for some people, what that means is it's because they've been through it and it took its toll on them. And they came to the firm conclusion, I'll have none of that anymore. So it has to be in your mind, a very simple desire, a simple kind of thing where I don't want it. I prefer not, you know. So barring that,
addiction guitar playing, like do you think you were able to stave off other addictions because you're so in love with the guitar and with composing and music and other instrumentation?
I found the joy of my creative outlet, and that may have been very helpful for me, because I never really did drugs, you know, like hard drugs or anything like that. And I never really drank a lot, you know, because I just, there was so much, I so much enjoyed like playing and finding new things and composing, and that any of that stuff gets in it gets in your way. I mean, I would get high, you know, and write something, and you know, when you're high, you think that whatever you're doing is just fantastic, you know, and you know, you feel like you've discovered the secrets of the universe, and you write down the sentence, and you're going to create a whole play and everything about it, and you wake up in the morning and it says, you know, I eat luggage or something stupid, you know, it's just ridiculous. So here's something else that might be helpful for people who have a pull, so to
to just destroying themselves. You know, you have to recognize that those things are just thoughts in your head, you know, and you can create a very bulletproof, boss-like, subconscious intention. And it can sound something as simple as, nope, I'm not doing that. That's it. It has to be a high quality no. I choose not.
I love the high quality no. You need merch for this. The high quality no is so valuable. Like it, no, you're right. I thought with Devin, it might have been like the frequencies of the metal. Like, because I felt there was a different, we were all on a different wavelength back then. And we were teetering on this really aggressive, but like you said, it wasn't from anger. It was a connectivity, a triumph over our demons or over our past to become the musicians, the career musicians we wanted to be. But I could tell with him, it wasn't.
No, Devin's a special case. Everybody's a special case, but Devin, he was an intense young man. He was always intense. There's so much drive and passion. There's passion and there's creative intensity. And we need people like that. And for some people, it's different. It's a playing intensity. For some people, it's a whatever their job is. I have a tour manager. He's intense, but he's very effective. So when you don't find that outlet, you're compromising your freedom. Okay, so Devin never made excuses for the kind of music he wanted to make. He threw himself into it wholeheartedly. Now, when he was with me, I only recognized his talent, how it would serve me in my music, you know, and he was a singer. And he was an incredible singer. You know, he could sing anything, and he was very entertaining and very, very funny and wild and all this stuff. And I loved all that stuff, but I didn't realize back then how actually creative and, you know, he was, you know, because he didn't really have an outlet with me to do the kind of thing. But, you know, he went through my band and he probably learned some things, but once he had the tools, he exploded because he had to get that out. And let me tell you something else about Devin. His music, no matter how intense it is, it's not evil. There is inside of it, there's this beaming desire for light, for transformation. And his music, I've watched him create, and I've watched how his music was a cathartic process for him in the pathway to his own sense of being centered and comfortable in his skin, you know, just like many of us. But he's unique in that he was able to really get that intensity out without any excuses. But his melodic ear, you can hear in even you're familiar with the record Alien.
Yeah.
That record, that should be studied. You know, it might be in the future. I don't know. It is as intense of a offering I've ever heard anywhere. And,
the Alien class with Professor Vi, I would sign up right now for that. We just and write a report at the end of it. No, you're right. And I think once he got into his authentic creative self and pulled all that stuff, like you said, out of the universe or the ether or whatever, it was amazing get to enjoy it. It really is incredible. I always thought, man, it would be so cool to hear him do vocals on like Bad Horsey or some of your other tracks. But
there was a track Devin and I have been working together through the years, a little bit here, a little bit there. I'm actually going to go up and spend a week with him in May. There was one set track on my record, Modern Primitive. It's called The Lost Chord. And I had just sent him the track. And I said, can you please decorate this? And holy shit, man. You know, what I got back was just miraculous. He was just so brilliant. His music, sure, through his career, more than wanting to make music, and I can't speak for him, obviously, but from my perspective, more than wanting to make music for success and keeping up, Devin's whole catalog can be seen as a document of transformation, personal transformation. He's used his music to find himself, the deeper part of himself. And it continues.
I know, it's amazing. It really is. Was there, I brought up Bad Horsey also because I just had to ask you about the video and how long it took you to get the, because it's so metal. The song is so hard. It's like one of your heaviest songs, I feel like. Yeah. But then to see the video, I was like, God, how long did that paint take to get on? And then did it get on everything? And did you still have stuff with shit on it?
Well, it was this oil-based paint, and it was like it gets in your hair. I was finding spots where it, you know, for like 3 weeks. Well, 2 weeks. And it was funny because the studio that we recorded it in called me like a week later, and they said, we're finding little blotches of silver paint all over the studio. Cause we had it all over everything, our hands and everything. So you open a door, you touch anything, you're leaving this silver paint. And it was that kind of paint that it was oil based. It wasn't water based. You know, I don't know why I did that. It was given to me, you know, it looked the best. So you're like, the way this looks or this, I'm like that. So it was like Goldfinger. I couldn't breathe.
Wow.
Yeah. But it looked pretty cool.
And it was so fitting for the track, because the track is so metallic.
Yeah.
I not that the track needs vocals, it really doesn't, but when I hear that, I could hear like Lane Staley on it or Jerry Cantrell or even Eddie. Like but do you find that when you're doing these records, like will you listen to stuff to get inspired from a certain genre that's popular at the time, or do you shut it all off and try to just have it come to you naturally? Like what is your most recent sort of creative process like?
Well, there's clues that are surrounding you. You just have to look for them. So, for instance, I'll talk about Bad Horsey first. That came from when I was filming the movie Crossroads. I was playing the part of the devil's guitar player, and I was reading the script. And the script said, Jack Butler, who was the character I was playing, breaks into this riff that sounds like a freight train. So in my mind, I say, okay, I know exactly what that is. I'm going to tune down and I'm going to go, kanka, woo, woo, you know. And we did that for the movie, but there was something about it that I liked. So there was a seed in it for a whole song. So I knew, okay, I'm going to use that and write a song. And so that's how that came about. But
And they didn't say like, oh, you owe us pub, or you know, we have the rights to that or something. You were able to, so you wrote it for the film, but that piece you used to create the entire song.
Yeah, I wrote it. I can do whatever I want with it. I don't allow my music to be bound or owned by anybody but me.
That's what all these kids out here need to hear. I've been saying it. I want to re-record like our records on Universal and stuff, just so I don't have to go through the red tape and deal with these people who have no emotional attachment to the songs themselves. It's just a catalog piece. It's just zeros and ones on a accountant sheet or whatever. So that's great to hear. So you can even use the master that was in the film free of any.
No, that I had a license.
Okay.
And when I released the, Elusive Light and Sound, which was all the film scoring I've done. You can make deals, you know, yeah. People want to make money. And I went to Well, it was very convoluted because the company that owned it was sold to another big company, and then that was absorbed. You got to do your homework on that shit. But it was a simple deal, and I got the rights to it, and I released it on a record. But Bad Horsey was a different story. I wrote it, and I own, you know, I own and control. I can, nobody owns the publishing on that riff. Even in the movie, I own the publishing.
Great.
You know, there's a couple of, I was so fortunate because when I was 18, I started working for Frank Zappa. And when I was 20, I joined the band, and I was at the house all the time. And I was able to watch and observe how Frank Zappa navigated everything, you know, how he did his business, how he treated people, how he accomplished those things he wanted, how he navigated to the things that were creative to him, how so many things. So I learned that I learned about the business also. I watched the way he conducted his business, and I like the business. I like business. You know, I understand the music business. At least I did back then. It's changed a lot, but you can make good out of any business that you're dealing with, you know? And a lot of times young musicians have this very adverse reaction to labels and stuff like that, and labels bad, you know, and I get it, you know, but the music industry is a great industry, and it's a great business if you navigate it appropriately for you, you know. So what I always tell young musicians that are looking at the music business and trying to figure out how they're going to move in it is because a lot of times it's conditioned into them that it all sucks and you're just going to get ripped off and nobody cares about you and you're going to lose everything. And in some cases, that's it. Usually it's because the goods weren't strong enough, you know. But another way to look at the music business is it's there for you, which it is. It's there for you. It's filled with incredibly creative people, attorneys, managers, agents, producers, engineers, film people. It's vast. And the people that are good at what they do are where they are in the business. And when you look at the music business as how can it serve me, you're gonna, and how can I serve it? Because all those people need you too. And you just have to find the ones that resonate with what you're doing, but always retain ownership when you can. That's the message that I give.
This has been so amazing. Thank you, Steve. I really appreciate it. I hope we can have you back on for a part two at some point.
I'd be happy to.
Where can they find you? Could a bunch of singers get together and say, Steve, these tracks don't need a singer on it, but could we license them from you and produce a Steve and Friends type of revisited versions of the songs?
Sure. Why not? I think I would be touched if somebody did something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good to know.
Yeah.
See, I pitched something to Metallica, which they said no, but they actually did get back to me, which was very nice, which was revisit Lulu and keep the words, pay Lou Reed's estate, but give like these up and coming metal guys a chance to sing on a Metallica track, but call it Lulu Revisited but keep the Lou Reed lyrical portion there, but make it musical and make it melodic or scream it or whatever.
So what was your plan?
It was to revisit Lulu.
Lulu is a
it's the record they did with Lou Reed. It's a interesting, fascinating, bizarre record. Go listen to it if you haven't heard that. It's really, it's almost like Lou Reed doing poetry or performance art over these riffs where there's just, I always felt like it could be cool to hear Dee Snider or LeJean from Seven Dust or Corey Taylor or someone sing these words, but make the words musical and make them melodic or make them screamy or
well,
whatever.
If you the only if you wanted to do that, you have every right to, but you have to re-record the songs.
Yeah, see, I wanted their blessing, and they said, and hopefully I'm not saying something I shouldn't say, but they said, you know, it might be a challenge with Lou Reed's estate. But I never reached out to, but I like to think of weird projects like that where you're building off of a foundation and it's got a built-in fan base and you're not starting from ground zero. Although I've done tons of projects where you start from ground zero and they become something as well. But
yeah. Well, if that's in your, if that has a real pull in you to do, you'll figure out how to do it. Nothing will stop you.
Thank you so much, Steve. This has been an honor. And
you got it, brother.
Best of luck with everything. And tell Roger I said hi if you see him.
I will.
And all right. Hopefully we'll catch you out there on the next record cycle or the next tour. If there's anything you want to announce, by all means.
Well, just right now I'm preparing for a tour I'm doing with Satriani in the next month in America. That's going to be great.
Incredible. Yeah. He's one of our favorite guests that we've had on. And yeah. I hope you guys blare some Possessed. Blare some Possessed. Ask him about producing that Possessed record. That was we got Possessed playing at my festival too. So that would be great. I should invite you and Satch. If you ever want to come, Milwaukee Metal Fest. I bought the festival. We would love to have you there. Come and sign, come and jam. I'm gonna hit your agent and your manager up with some ideas. So
send them in. You're doing great stuff, brother.
Thank you so much. That's high praise coming from you. All the best. And yeah, hope to see you soon.
All right. You take care.
Take care. Thanks, Mike. Bye. Thanks, everybody from Patreon. We'll be back next week. Quick little outro here. Thanking everybody for watching today's episode. We did it. We made it to episode 700. Thank you to Steve Vai for his time and for his positivity and for his just his amazing outlook on life and all the incredible licks and leads and solos and riffs and songs that he's given us throughout the years. His playing is, I mean, the guy is truly like, he's like a unicorn. He's like a fucking metal unicorn. He's one of a kind, and we love him. We appreciate him and couldn't have asked for a better guest for episode 700. We got a lot of great guests coming up, so let us know who you want to see on the show. But we got Marty Friedman coming back on, John Five, Anders Frieden from In Flames, Jacoby Shaddix, Shannon Larkin from Godsmack, and many others. You can hear them all early over at gasdigital.com. Get your subscription, tell them Josta sent you, or check out the audio on patreon.com/Josta, and you'll hear a bunch of extra content per month on patreon.com/Josta. Of course, I got to thank today's sponsors, indiemerchstore.com. Use the promo code Josta10. There's a ton of great new restocks, new classics designs, and new prints of a bunch of bands like Cannibal Corpse, Carnifex, Cattle Decapitation, Behemoth, and many others. I'm sending them some Anjosta for All albums to sell as well. So you can go to indiemerchstore.com/Josta and they'll get those up, and we'll send them some vinyl too. Use the promo code Josta10. Of course, thank you to centurymedia.store, your one-stop shop for all your favorite Century Media bands, especially the ones that are playing Milwaukee Metal Fest, Upon Stone, Skeletal Remains, Bewitcher, Night Demon, Lacuna Coil, and others. Big thanks to Century Media Records. Visit centurymedia.store after the show. And if you're in the market for a new axe, if you're a up-and-coming riff beast or an established one, please check out our sponsor, Dunable Guitars. Go to dunableguitars.com. Use the promo code MMF24 and you will save 10% off your brand new favorite axe. Riff out, Buster, with your Dunable guitar, and make sure you check out their stage at Milwaukee Metal Fest. Big thanks to EJ and Sasha and the crew at Dunable, and make sure you check out martyrstore.net if you want to pre-order the new album from yours truly, Anjosta for All, featuring Scotty and Chuck Billy, Zetro from Exodus, Joey Concepcion, my boy Charlie Belmore, Phil Demmel's on there. Petrino's on there. We got Amp Money from E-Town doing some backups. Howard Jones is doing some gang vocals with Amp Money, and Rob from Lionheart, myself. It's a great album. I think you'll love it. It's a love letter to thrash. Use the code JJ10. That's JJTEN at martyrstore.net. All right. We'll be back with Marty Friedman, John Five, and many others. Thank you all. I love you all. Drink your coffee, do your push-ups, listen to death metal. Bye-bye.
Executive producers Jake Olszewski, Ben Lee, AJ Lewis, Garrett Keeping, Dan Smith, Nick Torito, JJ Hernandez, Joe Bartovic, Jason Jarvis, Chris Larice, Alex Smolin, Todd McKee, John Blewett, Richard Miller, Kyle Marg, Nate Leffingwell, Morgan Costner, Mark Tagg, Zappagore Waikato, Niall Scollard, Kathy D'Ambrosio, Justin Steven, Jack Flanders, the Pit Commander, Andy Wilson, Jeffrey Kuhn, Kimo Humalamaki, Jonathan Metis, Brandon Cooper, Matthew Jankowskis, Jamie Kutcher, Ryan Underkoffler, Matt West, Ryan Maurice, Chad Green, Dallas Hendricks, Jacob Ahrensberg, Kenneth Moore, Kona Butterflies, Stephen Helm, Richard McIntosh, Jeff Stevenson, Ryan Williams, Larry Tooley, Dallas Bolin, Ryan St, Nathan Rex Madrid, Cameron Hendricks, Scandalous Official, Joe Motson, Let's Talk Resident Evil, Andrew Chase, Guy on the Couch, Chris Winchester, Antonio Reyes, Joe Otson, Dustin Stone, Lee Walker, Ryan Levson, John Henkes, Robert Bushaw, Troy Seal, Mark Horror Armenta, Jay Liberston, Nick Fowler, Mike Horgan, Emma Horgan, Arnorock, Patrick King, Oscar Brummett, Stacy Steineke, Fernando Somoza, Patrick O'Brien, Dominique Zimmer, Ryan Sanders, Lara Snyder, Daniel Burke, Milwaukee Metal Sausage, Adam Voss, Adam Mecklenburg.
Hey, Vinny from Belushi Speedball here, and we're playing Milwaukee Metal Fest May 18th. But you need to be getting tickets for the entire weekend, because there's a bunch of amazing bands playing, like Blind Guardian, Testament, Hatebreed, Mr. Bungle, Slaughter to Prevail, and many more. So come party. Get them tickets at therave.com/metalfest. Get them now!